22. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein kept tight control over Robert Mueller's Russia investigation. He aggressively wielded Justice Department regulations, giving him authority to overrule Mueller on any investigative or prosecutorial step to maintain leverage over the investigation. The existence of that authority was sufficient. He never formally had to exercise it. The general public perception continued to be that Mueller was on to another Watergate that could end the Trump presidency. "It's Mueller time," was a rallying cry so popular it became a t-shirt slogan. In reality, however, it was Rosenstein time. He oversaw the investigation with diligence and an iron hand, continuing to send a deputy for biweekly meetings with Mueller and his team. Mueller's prosecutors were mindful that Trump could order Rosenstein to fire Mueller. If Rosenstein refused, Trump could fire Rosenstein and find someone who would get rid of Mueller. The president's campaign of public intimidation, tweets, and claims the investigation was a witch hunt rattled many on Mueller's staff. The whole investigative atmosphere was stay in your lane, no mission creep. After Trump's controversial 2017 meeting with Putin in Hamburg, where he confiscated the translator's notes, they debated, but only in jest, about subpoenaing the translator's notes. They knew if they dared, they would be fired. After a long internal debate, Mueller decided not to issue a formal subpoena to Trump to compel his testimony. There was a belief that if they asked for the subpoena, the legal battle in the courts would take months, even a year. Or Trump could fire Mueller in response. Mueller told his prosecutors they should not stretch themselves too thin. If they tried to get it all, they could wind up getting nothing. Aaron Zebley, Mueller's deputy, told the prosecutors he had the pen on the final report, meaning he had Mueller's authority as final editor. One overriding consideration, Zebley said, was to make sure the report was a definitive account so no conspiracy theories, no grassy knoll theories would emerge as had happened after the 1963 assassination of President Kennedy. But it was a last-minute rush and debate among the senior prosecutors. The result was a compromise that is one of the most confusing lines in the history of high-profile investigations. While this report does not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Trump and Senator Lindsey Graham played a round of golf at Trump's West Palm Beach, Florida club on the morning of Sunday, March 24th. Trump was worried because Attorney General Bill Barr, who had replaced Sessions in early 2019, was expected to release a letter summarizing the Mueller report. Barr had served as Attorney General for President George H.W. Bush and held a strong, sweeping view of presidential power. Before releasing the letter, the Attorney General called Graham to give him a heads up. Mueller's investigation had been historic and lengthy. 19 lawyers, some 40 FBI agents and other professionals, 2,800 subpoenas, 500 search warrants, 500 witnesses. "You're not going to believe this," Barr said. "What?" Graham asked. After two fucking years, he says, "Well, I don't know. You decide," Barr said. "What do you mean?" Graham asked. "Well, there's no collusion," Barr said. Mueller had found no evidence that Trump or his aides had worked illegally with Russia to interfere in the 2016 election. That was great news. But Barr said Mueller's report was convoluted on the critical question of whether Trump had obstructed justice. He had not reached a conclusion. Barr sent a copy of the letter to Graham's Senate office, and one of his staffers called Graham with a more complete summary of the findings. The letter was addressed to Graham as chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee and three other congressional leaders. The core finding of the Mueller report, according to Barr's letter, was that the investigation did not establish that members of the Trump campaign conspired or coordinated with the Russian government in its election interference activities. For the president and his allies, this was cause for serious celebration, no evidence of working with the Russians. The second conclusion on obstruction of justice was less sweeping, but still legally exculpatory, Graham saw. After all, Mueller's report stated that while it did not conclude that the president committed a crime, it also does not exonerate him. Graham had served 6 years as an Air Force lawyer and several as the chief Air Force prosecutor in Europe. Although Mueller was operating under a long-standing Department of Justice policy that a sitting president could not be charged with a federal crime, Graham felt the phrase, does not exonerate, was gratuitous. It was not the job of prosecutors to exonerate. They had to decide whether to charge or not to charge. Mueller's language smacked of then-FBI Director James Comey's 2016 announcement in the Hillary Clinton email investigation that he would not recommend charges, but that her conduct was extremely careless. Mueller wrote in his report that fairness concerns prevented him from even reaching a judgment that the president committed crimes when no charges could be brought. Ordinarily, a person accused of a crime has a right to a fair public trial and can use that process to clear his or her name. However, Mueller wrote, a prosecutor's judgment that crimes were committed, but that no charges will be brought, affords no such adversarial opportunity for public name clearing before an impartial adjudicator. The concerns about the fairness of such a determination would be heightened in the case of a sitting president, where a federal prosecutor's accusation of a crime, even in an internal report, could carry consequences that extend beyond the realm of criminal justice. Mueller concluded he had the option to state in his report that he was confident, after a thorough investigation, that Trump clearly did not commit obstruction of justice. Based on the facts and the applicable legal standards, however, we are unable to reach that judgment, the Mueller report states. Barr said in his letter that while Mueller had not reached legal conclusions about alleged obstruction, he and Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein have concluded that the evidence developed during the special counsel's investigation is not sufficient to establish that the president committed an obstruction of justice offense. The full report, with grand jury redactions, would be released later, Barr said. For practical purposes, the Mueller investigation was over, Graham believed. There would be sniping, criticism, and second-guessing. The full report undoubtedly would dwell on incidents that were not pretty and would show Trump scheming and teetering on the edge of misconduct. But even if Mueller's report itself did not exonerate Trump, the essentials of exoneration were there in Barr's letter. No further indictments, no criminal charges of the president, no continuing investigation. The question at the end of these long, seemingly endless investigations was always, what's next? There was no what's next. What happens tomorrow? The answer so far? No official action. Trump's opponents and the Democrats would beat the Russian interference drum whenever possible. But it would sound hollow and be yesterday's stale news, Graham believed. Graham gave a summary of the good news to Trump. At 4:46 p.m. that afternoon, Trump stepped before reporters on the tarmac at Palm Beach International Airport and spoke for the first time about Barr's version of the Mueller report's conclusions. So after a long look, Trump said, after a long investigation, after so many people have been so badly hurt, after not looking at the other side where a lot of bad things happened, a lot of horrible things happened, a lot of very bad things happened for our country, it was just announced that there was no collusion with Russia. It's complete exoneration, Trump added, directly contradicting the Barr letter, which quoted the Mueller report's statement that it does not exonerate him. What do you think? Trump asked Graham after he boarded Air Force One. Well, Mr. President, very few presidents get two terms in their first term, but you just have, Graham said. This is the first day of a new presidency. Yeah, that's a good way to look at it, Trump replied. Mr. President, this cloud has been removed, Graham said. Trump seemed contemplative, probably the least demonstrative of anybody on the plane. It was out of character for him. Trump, his staffers, and Graham deplaned from Air Force One at Joint Base Andrews outside Washington to board Marine One and fly back to the White House. Graham and Trump sat across from each other. It was a beautiful early spring evening. "Isn't that great?" Trump said, now in a good mood. "Can you believe we're doing this shit? Can you believe I'm here, President of the United States, and you're here? Can you believe this shit? Isn't it the greatest thing in the world?" It was apparently his way of absorbing the reality that after 2 years of Mueller, it seemed over. Marine One flew so close to the Washington Monument, it felt as though they could almost touch it. As the helicopter approached the White House grounds, a throng of journalists waited. "There are the animals," Trump said. "They're the most heartbroken people in America." "Yeah, be easy on them," Graham replied. "This is a bad day for them." Graham recommended Trump be brief in his comments to the reporters. "Here's my 2 cents," Graham said. "Say something like, 'America's the greatest country on earth. Good night.'" He added, "If you'll say that and nothing else, they'll all fall over dead." Marine One landed at 7:04 p.m. Trump walked onto the South Lawn, looked directly at the cameras, and said, "I just want to tell you that America is the greatest place on earth. The greatest place on earth. Thank you very much. Thank you." And he walked away. When Graham got home, his phone was ringing. "Did you see them?" Trump said. "Who?" Graham replied. "The animals," Trump said. "No. When I said that, they all were stunned. They were speechless. The first time in my life, nobody asked me 120 questions, Trump said. That was the perfect thing to say. Years of countless headlines detailing possible ties or flirtations among Trump people and others connected to the Russian government were replaced by a new story. "Mueller finds no conspiracy" was the next morning's banner headline in the Washington Post. In the New York Times, the banner headline read, "Mueller finds no Trump-Russia conspiracy." A news analysis in the Times was headlined, "Burden lifts, leaving president fortified for battles to come." The Barr letter likely did more to shape public perception of the special counsel's investigation than the 448-page Mueller report itself, which was released in redacted form to the public nearly 4 weeks later. On March 27th, Mueller wrote to Barr complaining that his widely publicized 4-page summary letter did not fully capture the context, nature, and substance of this office's work and conclusions. He wrote, "There is now public confusion about critical aspects of the results of our investigation." The basis for Mueller's criticism became evident once the report was made public in April 2019 and could be compared to Barr's 4-page summary. But Mueller took no steps to change the outcome. Nor could he in a practical sense. His work was within the Justice Department, which Barr controlled. On April 29, 2019, Rosenstein submitted his 1-page resignation letter to the president. In what was almost a fan letter, Rosenstein raised the American flag and Trump's campaign motto. "We staffed the Department of Justice and the U.S. Attorney's offices with skilled and principled leaders devoted to the values that make America great," Rosenstein wrote. "I am grateful to you for the opportunity to serve, for the courtesy and humor you often display in our personal conversations, and for the goals you set in your inaugural address: patriotism, unity, safety, education, and prosperity." Trump's inaugural address would probably not be remembered for those themes, but for his invocation of American carnage. The central flaw in the Mueller investigation was that the prosecutors never found an inside witness who could tell a story of corrupt, illegal conduct. There was no comparable figure to John Dean, Nixon's White House counsel, who testified in 1973 to both his own illegal actions and Nixon's. There was no Linda Tripp or Monica Lewinsky to testify that President Clinton had lied in public statements and in a civil suit about Lewinsky's affair with Clinton. The investigation would not hang over Trump into the 2020 election. Rosenstein felt that on the Mueller investigation, he had made Trump bulletproof for the election and had done him a favor. The president was not guilty of obstruction of justice in Rosenstein's view. "I knew there was no basis to indict the president," Rosenstein told an associate. "I knew months before." When Barr appeared before the Senate Judiciary Committee on May 1st, Democrats pelted him with accusations that he acted politically in his handling of the Mueller report, more as Trump's defense attorney than as head of the Justice Department. "You put the power and authority of the Office of the Attorney General and the Department of Justice behind a public relations effort to help Donald Trump protect himself," Senator Mazie Hirono of Hawaii said. Several days later, more than 700 former federal prosecutors released a statement arguing that Trump's conduct described in the Mueller report would, in the case of any other person not covered by the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel policy against indicting a sitting president, result in multiple felony charges for obstruction of justice. But after 22 months of investigation, without the bombshell findings anticipated by some of Trump's opponents and critics, Mueller and his report faded from the headlines. In an April 2019 column, "Public has Mueller report fatigue and wants to move on," San Diego Union-Tribune political columnist Michael Smullins wrote that the Mueller report had become white noise. In a March 2020 opinion issued in a Freedom of Information Act lawsuit seeking the lifting of redactions in the Mueller report, senior U.S. District Court Judge Reggie B. Walton, an appointee of George W. Bush, wrote that Barr distorted the findings in the Mueller report. Walton wrote that Barr failed to note in his letter that Mueller's probe identified multiple contacts between Trump campaign officials and individuals with ties to the Russian government. On the obstruction issue, Walton wrote, "Barr failed to disclose to the American public that the reason Mueller determined not to make a traditional prosecutorial judgment was because of the Justice Department's policy against charging a sitting president with a federal crime." The inconsistencies between Attorney General Barr's statements, Walton wrote in his opinion, made at a time when the public did not have access to the redacted version of the Mueller report to assess the veracity of his statements, and portions of the redacted version of the Mueller report that conflict with those statements, caused the court to seriously question whether Attorney General Barr made a calculated attempt to influence public discourse about the Mueller report in favor of President Trump, despite certain findings in the redacted version of the Mueller report to the contrary. Walton's opinion did not address the substance of the investigation or whether Mueller or Barr should have reached different legal conclusions regarding the president's actions. The legal case in which he issued the opinion focused on whether the Justice Department properly redacted the report or whether some redactions should be removed under the Freedom of Information Act. It was a public relations critique accusing Barr of carrying water for Trump. Trump never let up on his attacks on the Mueller investigation into Russia's role in his 2016 victory. On May 23, 2019, Barr announced a new investigation into alleged spying on the Trump campaign, potentially by law enforcement and intelligence agency officials. The Justice Department was turning the tables. Dan Coats and CIA Director Gina Haspel made an appointment to see Barr. The Mueller investigation had already torn inconclusively through the intelligence agencies, they said. "Why did this need to be done? It will be very disruptive to the agencies." Barr said he thought there was more out there that had not been investigated. Haspel said the investigation could have a negative impact on morale at the CIA. Her people were spooked by the new investigation, and some wondered if they would need to get an attorney. No, Barr said, he did not think so. He tried to be reassuring. It's not going to have that much of an impact. Haspel disagreed. It was like Mueller, too. It would be a nightmare for the agency. Coates suspected Barr had former CIA Director Brennan in his sights, but did not say so. He asked if John Durham, the U.S. attorney appointed to oversee the case, would be looking at Coates' own people at the office of DNI. Potentially, Barr said. Coates was worried about the GS-14 employee who had just done his or her job and passed along intelligence and seemingly routine reports. He also thought that Durham would be looking at Obama's former DNI, James Clapper, who was one of the persistent public critics of President Trump. Coates and Haspel said they would give the Justice Department any documents they requested because the president had so ordered. They had no choice. But hopefully you will do this in the right way, Coates said. I hope you can do this in a way that is not going to cause a lot of problems, Haspel said. And can we stay informed in terms of what you plan to do and make sure we know what's happening? Don't worry, Barr said. We will. We will. Your people won't need to be concerned. Barr said he would let them know what he had learned and if there was anything they should do. Before anything was released, he said, they would have an opportunity to respond. Presumably, they could make their case. But there was a lawyerly caution, though he was obviously trying to calm them down. Don't worry. Don't worry, Barr said. This is not a witch hunt. There's more out there, and we just need to know what it is. Mueller testified before the House Judiciary Committee on July 24, 2019, giving an uneven performance that frustrated Republicans and Democrats alike with fumbling, incomplete answers. He appeared at times to lack familiarity with his own report. He did little to help the public understand the dense legal document his office had produced. Barr and Trump had defined the report, and Trump continued to publicly assail the Mueller investigation as a witch hunt and a hoax. Ultimately, Mueller's investigation led to 34 indictments, including Trump's personal attorney Michael Cohen, campaign chairman Paul Manafort, deputy campaign chairman Rick Gates, National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, political confidant Roger Stone, and a number of Russian nationals. But Trump emerged relatively unscathed, and in doing so, had dealt a blow to his political enemies. Trump later told me, "The beautiful thing is, it all evaporated. It ended in a whimper. It was pretty amazing. It ended in dust." He had weathered the greatest threat to his presidency to that point, and perhaps come out politically stronger, but no doubt more emboldened than before.